Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, I'm with Professor John Glasby, who's Professor of Health and Social Care and Director of the Health Services Management Centre at Birmingham University. Welcome, John.
Hiya.
That sounds quite a broad remit there, health and social care. What's your focus?
Well, the centre I run, HSMC, is a national policy centre that does research and provides policy advice to government around the future of health services and of adult social services. We also do a lot of training and executive education for people who are managers and leaders in local government and the health service.
So it's a particularly apt time to talk to you with the bill that's just been published.
Well, that's right. We're debating the Health and Social Care Bill as we speak, pretty much. And there's been a lot of coverage in the newspapers about some of the positive and some of the negative aspects of those reforms. And it's been quite a controversial debate.
So if this legislation comes into force, what's that going to mean for Britain?
Well, there are a series of elements to the bill, and it is quite technical. The ones that have caught the attention of the media commentators are probably around the proposals to transfer funding responsibilities to small groups of GPs locally, probably about £80 billion worth of public money. And there have been concerns about that mechanism. GPs are small business people often. They're not public sector employees in the same way a social worker or a nurse or a teacher is a public sector employee. They have different accountability arrangements. And actually, many GPs are quite pragmatic people. They're doers, if you like.
Presumably, if you're a GP, you came into your job to practice medicine, to heal people, as it were.
And would you want responsibility for £80 billion worth of public spending if you hadn't necessarily had the training to deal with it? And in particular, would you want it at the moment with the level of spending cuts that are being introduced across the public sector? So we might run the risk of transferring large amounts of money to a group of GPs, some of whom are very enthusiastic, many of whom aren't, and a number of whom won't necessarily have the skills yet to be able to use that money to best effect. So a number of commentators, us included, have expressed concern about those changes, feel they're too far too soon, and there might be other ways of getting clinical involvement in the health service without this big bang approach and series of reforms.
We're all happy to bash managers to some extent, but doctors could, in fact, be more expensive than managers.
Well, indeed, I think there's a couple of points there. First of all, with changes in GPs' pay in the past, they're often quite expensive, and there could be a middle-level manager or another kind of worker who might be able to do the same kind of role in a management sense at a cheaper rate. So sometimes it can be false economy trying to involve GPs in areas where their skills aren't being best utilised. It's best to free them up to do what they're good at and what they came into the job to do in the first place. The second thing, I think, is about the morale of managers. At the moment, the government has unleashed probably the biggest reorganisation in the history of the health service, and it needs the managers it's got to help it introduce the new changes. And those managers are being asked to phase out the old system and bring in the new system and make £20 billion worth of savings all at the same time, whilst also reapplying for their own jobs or covering the jobs of several other colleagues who've been made redundant. And so we really need the managers we've got at the moment. And if you have a car accident and need an operation, or you need a transplant or something like that in the future, you'll want a health service that's really well managed and really well run. And we may well miss some of our managerial colleagues when they're no longer around.
The headlines have all been grabbed by this devolution of spending to GPs, but there's been some other elements of this which have been perhaps a bit less discussed.
Well, that's right. The emphasis has been on GP commissioning, as it's known. And that is new and different, but actually probably three quarters, perhaps four fifths of the bill is similar to what went before. You might have expected the previous government to have done something similar. There's an emphasis in there on local government working closer with the NHS, so that you get much more joined up services for people who have multiple needs. There's the suggestion that public health should transfer from the NHS across to local government so it can be part of the work that local government does more generally about health and well-being. And then there's an emphasis on moving away from targets and process measures towards outcomes, not just counting how many of different things we do or how quickly we see people, but thinking through, well, what impact does that have? What outcome does it achieve? And all those things seem really positive measures to me that have been drowned out a little bit by the focus on GP commissioning.
So when are we likely to see some of these changes in action? If all this goes ahead, when will the outcomes be felt?
Well, the problem with reorganisations is that they're normally very disruptive. The evidence suggests that it can take 18 months to 2 years after the change has been made.
So we're looking at 2013?
Well, a lot of the changes come in 2013, 2014.
Right, uh-huh.
The evidence, though, would still suggest that it might take 18 months to 2 years after that for things to recover to how they were before. Often, role clarity declines, morale declines, positive service development stalls because people are focused on the reorganisation rather than on delivering good healthcare to people. Things often get worse before they get better, mm-hmm. and you can see that with reorganisations in any sector of the economy or anywhere in the world. What's interesting about the white paper changes and about the bill that's going through at the moment is that many of the changes come into force in 2013, 2014, which will be when we're thinking about the next general election. So we have a Conservative Party that's really emphasised that it's a safe pair of hands with the NHS. And yet actually some of these reforms are very risky.
So they have staked a huge amount on this working pretty quickly.
Well, they have, and it feels politically risky as well as risky with the organisation of the health service, as it were.
So that's kind of 2013-14, but in the even longer term, where do you think things are going in your expert opinion?
Well, if I had to make a prediction, I'd say that in 10 to 15 years' time, we'd see a move towards Scandinavian-style local government-led services with health and social care being delivered and funded, but from within local government.
So that means local councils?
Local councils, local authorities, yes. I mean, at the moment, we have a separate national health service that's accountable nationally to the Secretary of State. And then we have a different system of local government with local councillors who are elected locally. We pay our council tax locally, and they're accountable locally to local people. So the nature of accountability between the two services is different. And I think if the NHS is going to be successful over the next decade or so, it won't just have to make the right kind of decisions, but it'll have to make those decisions in the right kind of way and in the way that brings local people with the decision makers. So that if a health service manager or a GP consortium decides to downgrade an accident, an emergency department, or if it decides to deny allegedly life-saving cancer drugs to a single mother with three children, we need to be in a position where local newspapers are saying, well, we either agree or we disagree with the decision, but we recognise that that manager or that GP is the locally legitimate body to make that very difficult decision on our behalf.
Local government in charge of health and social care would solve the accountability problem, so they're not the individual business people like GPs, but would that not exacerbate the postcode lottery problem of the NHS?
It probably depends on your point of view. At the moment, we've got a government committed to localism, and that implies doing things differently in each area according to the needs of the local community, and a government committed to saying, actually, that's okay. In the past, we've tried to achieve equality, but we've done it by trying to treat everyone the same, giving people equality of input, if you like. So no matter where you live, you get the same kind of service. Actually, if areas start off unequal and you treat everyone the same, all you do is just extend and perpetuate that inequality. Perhaps what you need to do in future is have the freedom and flexibility locally to be able to do things differently so that you can tailor services to the needs of local people and local communities. So it's either a postcode lottery or it's appropriate local discretion in an era of localism, depending on your point of view.
So what's next with this piece of legislation? What's going to happen now?
Well, the bill's being debated and I'm sure there'll be all sorts of compromises and concessions. And like any piece of legislation, you're trying to weigh up the pros and the cons and work out what you think in the round.
So overall, good thing or bad thing?
We have asked an academic for a yes or no answer.
You
normally get a kind of yes, kind of no.
Yeah.
It's mixed. I think the danger is that the risks are so risky that they may outweigh the potential benefits. And I think we could have the same impact through evolution rather than revolution.
And potentially the right thing at the wrong time for the government if they've got to get it through and get it working so quickly.
Indeed. I think at the moment the financial situation is the most pressing challenge, and that might be more important than the structure of the service. So some of the principles here are probably right, but whether this is the right way of going about it remains to be seen.
Professor John Glasby, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.